And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and Phil Condon is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
We're going to talk to Steve Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. Gowans.wordpress.com. He's got a great column called What's Left? That's a good question. And at the halfway point, 5:30, we will be talking to Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Zafar is an authority on matters Islamic as well as the politics of the Middle East, and has traveled to almost every country we ever discuss, which is not usually the case when you're dealing with experts. They prefer to do it, you know, by summarizing what they've read in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, or whatever. That'll be our main matters. We'll be speaking to Stephen shortly. I'll just tell Phil, I went to the Pan American Games, and the Cubans, bless their hearts, boy, did they do well in the boxing. I was very impressed. And as a social, cultural, historical note, the Americans, who used to be a dominant power in boxing, they used to win everything, they were barely represented. So things are evolving. Not only were the Cubans there, by the way, a couple of the finals bouts were between Cubans and Venezuelans, which was, for me, win-win. I wasn't going to go home unhappy. But we are joined now by Stephen Gowans, I believe. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes. Hello, Phil. I'm here.
Well, it's really good to be talking to you. You've put up a very nice comment today, and it couldn't be more timely. I say again, it's What's Left, and it's gowans.wordpress.com. You are looking at a speech, very recent, delivered by the president of Syria, and you noted some high points of his talk in that you think probably the rest of us ought to know about, and I can guarantee you that unless they're reading you or listening to Taylor Report, they're not. The first one was on the West double standards. What did you pick out there? What's he got to say on this matter of double standards?
What Assad had said was that Western powers, what they call terrorism, what hits them, and when the same kind of behavior or action is directed toward countries that Western powers governments that Western powers would like to overthrow, they call it revolution or freedom or democracy or human rights. Mm-hmm. He says, when you look at these behaviors, and they're directed toward Western governments, the perpetrators are terrorists, but when they're directed against official enemy states like Syria, they're rebels or the moderate opposition. And then he notes that, you know, the Western powers scream at the top of their voices whenever, as he put it, they are touched by a spark of fire, while they fall deathly silent when the Syrians are burned by it.
Mm-hmm. And thanks to you, I looked at that speech, and he also made the point that he thinks that, I hope this is true, but he thinks many people are becoming wise to this, that as this has drawn on, that the hypocrisy is something palpable. He thinks that there is an awareness growing, even in, say, the Canadian population, that the U.S. is lying through its teeth.
Yeah, I mean, there's an immense hypocrisy, and I don't even think anyone tries to apologize or defend it anymore. Because you can't defend it or apologize it for it anymore. Yeah. I mean, you see that the allies of the United States, Turkey, you know, Saudi Arabia, openly supporting Islamist militants in Syria, and claiming that, you know, that they're in a coalition to stop ISIS or to stop terrorism, but at the same time are supporting terrorists. As Assad points out, I mean, you can't be in a coalition against a terrorist organization while at the same time supporting terrorist organizations, mm-hmm. Which is precisely what the United States and Canada and Western powers and their allies are doing.
You know, the background of this speech is, if really today's papers and mainstream media are talking about this Turkish, U.S., and I guess more largely kind of a NATO conversation about basically creating an airspace. I noticed that one of the headlines in the Canadian press today was, don't call it a no-fly zone, meaning do it, but don't call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And this has, he takes this up. It would be really most helpful if, when we see that these discussions are happening, the speech of Assad is laid alongside of it, because he says they have created this language of humanitarian intervention, which is what Turkey will call what it's going to do, or NATO. But that's rather the nub of it. Is, I mean, why is there so this credence given to anything that comes from Ankara or Washington when they start talking about overflying Syrian territory?
And no credence should be given to anything that comes from Ankara. I mean, the Turks, of course, have been very reluctant to join the coalition that's supposed to be fighting ISIS. And you know that the United States has been pressuring the Turks to allow U.S. Fighter jets to take off from air bases in Turkey.
Yeah, now that is a kind of dramatic aspect of this, right? The Turks actually, going back at the time of the attack on Iraq, the invasion of Saddam Hussein's government, the attack on him, the Turks mm-hmm. actually shocked the world by not going along with that, right? They said, you can't use our air base.
Right.
I don't know if they were faking it, but they definitely made a thing of not being involved.
Yeah, and in this case, the Turkish government has, as many observers have pointed out, has been more interested in seeing the Assad government toppled in Syria than in stopping ISIS. They've been kind of playing footsie with ISIS. But, I mean, they have been talking to the U.S. since at least December about establishing or becoming involved in the coalition, and their quid pro quo has always been, well, if you want us to become involved and allow you to use our air bases, then what you're going to have to do is allow us to establish a buffer zone in northern Syria.
Which has a Kurdish factor too, right? Basically, you're going to have to give up your Kurdish surrogates or friends.
Exactly, and which is one of the motivations for Ankara. I mean, this is territory in which the Kurds would eventually like to establish, or part of the territory in which they'd like to establish a homeland. So this allows the Turks to deal with, this Kurdish militancy and insurgency. Well, at the same time, taking steps to achieve their ultimate goal in Syria, which is to, overthrow a kind of anti-colonial, anti-imperialist government, which is also secular, unlike the Turkish government,
yes,
which is kind of a Muslim Brotherhood-based government.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of whether this is a no-fly zone or not, I mean, some of the press accounts have been talking about this as being a de facto no-fly zone, or U.S. officials saying, well, it is a no-fly zone, but we're just not going to call it that. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Just do it, but don't say it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were press reports in December talking about the discussions that the Turkish government, the U.S. government, was having on this. It's been under consideration for quite some time. But it's interesting to go back to those earlier reports. The motivation at that point was said to establish a kind of area that would ensure that rebels could cross the border from Turkey mm-hmm. into Syria, so without risk or fear of being attacked.
Mm-hmm. I find this part of it, of course, at this moment, when you use the word hypocrisy, it's quite strange, because isn't it understood that most of these well-trained now terrorists are, and by the way, trained within Turkey, is my understanding, mm-hmm. are crossing that border. So to talk as though Turkey really cares about stopping ISIS, I find it always a little discombobulating to try to follow that, because obviously they may be doing the game of what my right hand doesn't know what my left hand is doing, but they definitely are doing it. Is that right?
Yeah, but it's hard to make a cogent case that this is really about stopping ISIS. And, I mean, even U.S. officials and Western officials and some of the press reports have been kind of acknowledging that and pointing out that, you know, the Turks and the militant Islamists who are really going to be behind the establishment of this buffer zone, because they're going to have so-called relatively moderate opposition.
Relative.
Now it's relatively moderate opposition rather than moderate opposition.
Or relatives of the relatively moderate.
So, I mean, they're going to be involved in establishing this so-called buffer zone, but then it's pointed out that these people really want to defeat Assad, and they're not that concerned with defeating ISIS.
And that really brings the Assad speech. And by the way, you know, that speech, which is, again, it's available at the website, he is talking to real authorities throughout his society. He's talking to mayors. He's talking to political officials. He's talking to – and he represents a coherent and actually stable, given all the things that have been thrown at it, collection of people. When we talk about the opposition – they can't even agree on the names of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to stop ISIS, he's the guy. I mean, you would just go to the government of Syria and say, let's coordinate our struggle. It seems to me it needs to be said, let's just coordinate our struggle against ISIS, because ISIS is the problem. And then it would be solved.
Right. And his argument is that ISIS is just part of this larger terrorist movement. Which the West, as he puts it, or he calls it a monster, they want to keep it in check but not eliminate it.
Yeah.
Want to use it for their own purposes while protecting, I think in this case, protecting a kind of puppet government in Iraq from attack by ISIS. And I mean, when we're talking about the relatively moderate opposition, what they're talking about is al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda, which is ideologically indistinct from ISIS. I mean, the only difference between al-Nusra and ISIS is that al-Nusra is willing to confine its operations to Syria, whereas ISIS's operations, you know, spill over the border from Syria into Iraq and threaten American interests in Iraq.
They have a global outlook.
Yes, and an outlook that endangers the U.S., you know, supported government in Iraq. If it wasn't for that, ISIS would probably be called the relatively moderate opposition in the same way that Nusra is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the point that Assad wants to make is, so the militant Islamists are sometimes useful for the United States and its allies, as in the case of trying to overthrow a secular nationalist anti-imperialist government in Damascus, and sometimes isn't so useful and is a danger to the United States and its allies, as in ISIS threatening the government in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm. I was very struck by the fact that he addressed them directly. He said to you, to those people who call themselves the opposition and you're working with our external enemies, he said, if you haven't noticed, they're going to throw you away like waste paper. He said, I can tell you this, the Syrians have already thrown you away like waste paper, but you're kidding yourselves if you think you're going to get anything. When they're through with you, they will just get rid of you.
And they will. I mean, so they can coordinate their actions with al-Nusra now, and if they manage to overthrow the Assad government, al-Nusra won't rise to power in Syria. It'll be someone under the yoke of the United States.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the criminal, I would like to call it a quasi-criminal involvement of the Canadian government and, of course, the Americans, the British, the French, the Turks, certainly. The idea that they can tamper with the airspace of Syria, tamper with the border, and say they're doing that, or at least don't even answer if they're talked to about it, they are in violation, clear violation of international law and all the principles of the Charter of the United Nations, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, and so they have to concoct a story to justify the violation of international law. But they do have a number of stories. I mean, the Turks are trying to argue that they're under threat by ISIS, mm-hmm. and therefore they need to intervene.
But wouldn't the correct response be to say to Syria, "There, let us agree then to close this border between the two of us"?
Yes, and let's coordinate our actions against.
Because
ISIS.
That would mean that's a way to test whether or not they're serious. The rhetoric is interesting, but it should be followed by some kind of. If it's not actually based on a willingness to identify the border and close it, then it's just a lie.
And it is a lie. And then, you know, there's this pretext about establishing a kind of a buffer zone in which the Syrian refugees can come back and live free from harassment by ISIS and the Syrian government. But if you look at earlier reports about the Turks and the Americans talking about establishing this buffer zone, they talked about establishing an area of alternative governance mm-hmm. that would be protected from attack by government forces.
Yeah, that's total. That's ripping the UN Charter up
mm-hmm.
and international law. I did work on this in a couple of cases when I worked for lawyers in the Arusha, Tanzania, the UN. It was pointed out during trials there that if you have a war and civil wars or however you want to define it, states cannot engage in them, and they're supposed to. Any refugee, for example, is supposed to be moved. I think at that time it was 12 miles, not allowed. Maybe even more. I think it was maybe 50 kilometers from a border. Now, your job was to see to it that anybody coming into your country saying I'm fleeing for my life got away from that border and was not permitted to arm themselves and engage in any kind of action. I mean, it wasn't something hypothetical. That's the law.
Mm-hmm.
And governments were threatened with international pressure if they didn't live up to it.
Right. But and even the story about, you know, establishing a buffer zone so that refugees can come back to Syria is completely absurd. I mean, what refugee wants to return to a zone that's going to be used by militant forces to launch attacks on a government?
Yeah, forces who will check your ethnic identity, they will check your religious affiliation, and they might chop your head off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's where a refugee wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, in his speech he said, the refugees aren't running to ISIS. They're not running into those areas. They come to the Syrian government or to a truly neutral area or
mm-hmm.
relatively neutral.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess, so apropos of the other forces involved around this, what do you make of the approach of the Russians and the Chinese? I noticed he praised them in his speech. He also dealt with the Iranian matter and Hezbollah. Tell us what his assessment was and what you make of that.
Well, you're right. I mean, what he did was that he acknowledged the contributions that certainly the Chinese and Russians have made, particularly in supporting Syria at the Security Council. But also Iran and Hezbollah have made considerable contributions in terms of material and manpower.
He seems to have made his point about Hezbollah in that he says, yes, they're fighting. We're glad to have them. Mm-hmm. They have a right to be here. And you remember when that used to be kind of a touchy issue. But I take it as almost a sign of strength that he says, yes, we're allies here. And of course, he has a government. He has a right to make alliances with people if he wishes to.
He does, and we could consider this kind of an axis of resistance. When I mean, there's this attempt to say, well, you know, what binds all of these movements and countries is that they're Shiite majority. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's just coincidental. And what's important here is, Iran and Hezbollah are a country and an organization that are opposed to colonialism, to imperialism. They're trying to establish some independence. and importantly also that they're anti-Zionist, mm-hmm. as is the Syrian government.
Mm-hmm. That's another. I'm glad you raised that point about he spoke of colonialism, and of course now in the West we're trained to have a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, you're talking about the bad old days where that's over. But he points out that these governments that are financing and arming and inciting the terrorists are entities who were created by the colonial powers and with whom they remain extremely chummy, particularly the most absolute monarchs on earth.
Yeah, I mean, these are the reactionary Arab regimes that are essentially puppets of the United States. And you're right. I mean, Saudi Arabia, for example, has got to be one of the most horrific places on earth. Mm-hmm. Hardly a democracy. I mean, it's an absolute monarchy. It has this backward, reactionary, official, religion, Wahhabism, mm-hmm. Whose ideology is very similar to that of Al-Qaeda and ISIS and al-Nusra. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about hypocrisy earlier on. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just this blatant hypocrisy of the United States and Western powers treating Saudi Arabia as if it's some kind of acceptable,
yes,
the beneficial power,
yes,
simply because it's an ally of Western powers.
Yes, yeah, we're marionated in hypocrisy here.
And also the Canadian government contributing arms to Saudi Arabia, selling arms to Saudi Arabia, as the United States does.
Yeah, and always when they get a chance to stand in front of the UN, they talk about their core values. So the core value is we will sell lethal weapons to an absolute monarch,
mm-hmm.
who decapitates people for being foreigners sometimes. And lastly, on that point, Stephen, and this is gowans.wordpress.com, and a very valuable piece just today, and the What's Left column by Stephen Gowans. We have an election coming up. Do you suppose this important issue of violating the airspace of Syria and providing weapons to people who are committing terrorist acts against them will be discussed at all, or should it be?
It ought to be discussed. It will not be discussed. Instead, all of the major parties will line up behind this, well, maybe with one exception.
I'm anxious to know about him. Who would that be?
Maybe. Perhaps the yeah. Green Party might yeah. not go along.
We will cross our little green fingers for that one. And the media won't say, "Whoa, we're disappointed." They will go right along as well. So what's wrong with this democracy we've got?
Mm-hmm. No, and they'll all line up behind us by calling it some kind of humanitarian intervention. We're violating Syrian sovereignty because we're humanitarian.
Mm-hmm. And protecting human rights. Yeah, I get quickly your thought about it. I to me, closing embassies is an act of incitement to violence. If you say your government doesn't exist in our eyes, it seems to me you're telling people that they can do anything they want against that government.
Mm-hmm.
That's. Would you agree with that?
Yes. No. Absolutely. I think that's true.
Yeah. It's and think of it, also the humanitarian side, Canadians can't come and go. Syrian Canadians have every kind of problem. And, of course, they even have it with Venezuela. They can't come and go comfortably. They have to be given a hard time. We don't appear to be sufficiently civilized, in my opinion. Stephen Gowans, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Your article today and citation of those quotes from Assad, I think, very helpful. Thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you.
Okay, talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. And it is timely, and I urge you to go to it, not only to read what Stephen has selected there from it. I agree with him that he's picked out the most poignant, but it is a text, show some respect for other states and people. When a prominent leader gives a speech, read the speech. Canadians all tune in when Obama gives his State of the Union show, where he introduces his relatives and a favorite basketball player or a favorite this or that. And we don't, but that's important, yes. But then there are other states who have their own opinions and differences. Somebody should say something. Or should read them so that we, how is it coherent in the brain If your leader says blankety blankety blank bang bang, and then you are satisfied with that, why wouldn't you say and then did he answer? You know that how he, in conversations, so people will say, and I told him where to get off. I told him, and then you say, if you're polite, you say, and what did he say? And often, what he said turns out to be almost as good as bang bang, and I told him, even better.